Good morning. It is Thursday, the 11th of October, and welcome to this special edition of the Roundtable, part of our Lockbox Election Deep Dive series on issues that deserve your attention ahead of voting day in November. I'm Joe Donahue. This morning, we focus on LGBTQIA+ issues this election season. In recent years, LGBTQ rights have increasingly been used as political tools. In 2020, during the presidential election year, anti-trans legislation reached a record high with 118 bills introduced. By this year, that number has surged more than fivefold. 658 bills targeting bodily autonomy, healthcare access, sports participation, even the visibility of the LGBTQ community, particularly focusing on trans youth. At the same time, anti-trans conservatives continue to spread misinformation about gender-affirming care, fueling harmful rhetoric. As a result, 45 of these bills have become law across 16 states. As the 2024 election approaches, the fight for LGBTQ liberation is more critical and urgent than ever. On one hand, the LGBTQ community has gained increased invisibility, but this has also sparked what some describe as a backlash. For example, we saw this earlier this year. Brands like Target and Bud Light scaled back their Pride-themed merchandising after facing backlash for partnering with LGBTQ influencers. Over the next 2 hours, we will focus on this issue with a roster of seven guests who will provide context, concerns, and information, and we are lucky enough to meet them all right now. Let me get to the group here and introduce them in fashion. We have three guests in the studio. We have two guests joining us remotely, and in case you don't know this, five guests is a lot of guests, but we need each and every one of you, so here we go. We welcome Courtney D'Allard, who is Associate Director of Intercultural Student Engagement at UAlbany. Hello, Courtney. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Really wonderful to have you on the program. Gwen Wright is here, community activist, former executive director of the New York State Office for the Prevention of Domestic Violence. Gwen, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
We also welcome Ron Zaki, Senior Director of the New York State Hate and Bias Prevention Unit at Division of Human Rights. Hello, Ron. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you very much for being with us. And Tondra Legrone is here, Chief Executive Officer of In Our Own Voices. Hello, Tondra. How are you?
I'm great this morning, and that's Tondra.
All right, it is Tondra. Now, you know,
good morning, everyone.
I just want you to know Ron told me that, but then I had from our production team, I had the phonetics, and I decided to trust them. I'm sorry, Ron, don't think any less of me, but I have to work with them every day, okay? All right. We also welcome Libby Post, who is had stepped out, but she'll be back, I assume, and a political consultant, lobbyist, and regular roundtable panelist. And again, we thank you all for being with us. So what I'd like to do as we first start and go around the in this first section before we go back to a little break with some fundraising is just get some thoughts from all of you as to where we are in these less than a month before the election of dealing with LGBTQ issues and the campaign. And ultimately, we don't have to get into the horse race of it, but I am interested in the concerns that you have and why this particular election is so important. Tondra, let's begin with you.
Sure. Good morning. So your first question is, what is kind of the temperature of what I'm seeing in the community?
Right.
I think folks are really at a place where I'm hearing that there is this uncertainty around safety is the number one kind of concern for folks. giving past kind of behaviors during elections, and so folks are really feeling uneasy. And of course, you know what this election means for not only just the LGBTQ, particularly BIPOC individuals, but women identified as well, is that you know we're you know folks are at a place where our rights and our human rights are on the line. We feel that tension that if the election does not go in kind of a democratic way, that we feel that women's rights, the right to choose what to do with your body, is on the line. LGBT rights, you know, we are over 600 LGBT anti-legislation bills so far that have been introduced, which is scary. TGNC, children, even, you know, children are really feeling it. So we see a heightened sense of anxiety that folks are coming in our doors that are seeking not only individual counseling, but we're making space for folks to have conversations of this impact and what this impact may mean on group levels. And our doors are always open. But this is a scary time for people, less than 30 days away. And so we are preparing the best way that we can. And what I mean by preparation, we're prepping for safety and what that means for our community, especially, you know, Interim Voices' house on Lark Street, which has a lot of traffic. And so we're just making sure we're going to try to be safe.
So on that, and looking at safety, let's go to Ron Zaki, Senior Director of New York State Hate and Bias Prevention Unit at Division of Human Rights. So I assume you're seeing what Tandra just described.
Yeah, you know, every time there's an incident, you know, the last election, the previous administration federally, we saw upticks of hate and bias across the state, and we're anticipating, you know, that could happen again. But we hope not. You know, hopefully this can move in a positive way. You know, we've seen the difference between administrations. This administration on the state level has done so much to protect LGBTQIA plus New Yorkers and to continue that legacy of Stonewall, where LGBTQ people here in New York State have more rights and protections. And we've moved on to continue to fight for those protections and the equality, but also equity. And so, you know, hopefully we're moving in a different direction, but we're always prepared for whatever may come up.
Talking this morning about these issues and the importance of this particular election coming up, we welcome Courtney DeAllard, who is Associate Director of Intercultural Student Engagement at UAlbany. So, how is it going on campus?
Well, I mean, I think the students are really engaged, and that's a pretty powerful part about being on a campus that is creating spaces for education. So we have a lot of different opportunities for students to really engage in the areas they want to understand more, right? How do we, I mean, Rockefeller College doing a whole series of opportunities for students to get engaged and talk about, well, what does it mean for SCOTUS, right? What does it mean for the docket that would come up for the judges and for national campaigns.
Right.
So that's pretty powerful. It's powerful to be on a campus with a lot of active, aware, conscious students. You know, it's a microcosm of the larger community. Everything that exists in the world exists on that campus, and it's how we hold it together and how we bring people together and have conversations. So it's palpable in those ways because you've got students who are, you know, putting out the vote. You've got students who are talking about LGBTQ issues. You've got students that are talking about Palestine and Israel. You've got students that are talking about, you know, abortion and access and bodily autonomy, all that same stuff. And they really have a platform and a forum, not just to talk about the issues that they care about, but to talk across issues in a powerful way that they'll have to do their whole lives. So I love that, being able to do that work. And it doesn't mean it's not incredibly hard at times.
Gwen Wright, bring us to the community. How is it on the ground?
Well, I think that I would echo what's been said already and include the fact that Prop 1 in New York State has definitely brought some anti-LGBTQAI plus sentiment. And the concerns that are being raised are so outrageous that it's really scary. I mean, it's sort of like going back 4 years ago, one of the things that we saw happen during that last presidential election and following was an uprise, an uptick in the number of LGBTQAI plus individuals who were elected to public office. Unfortunately, they've had some significant challenges within that forum. And so now what we're seeing is things that, you know, it's sort of like the things that people come up with, the antis come up with, is just outrageous when they say things like, you know, boys are going to be on girls' sports teams. Well, no, that's not accurate. Boys will not be on girls' sports teams. So a lot of targeting to transgender youth, which is really unfortunate and downright scary, and it's unfair. You know, someone said yesterday at a forum that I was up that it's not okay to bully, for adults to bully children at all, ever. And that's what we're seeing happening, is that adults are really bullying kids and making them feel less than. And I thought we were at a place in our political development where we encouraged and supported and welcomed all people to the table, and now we're seeing some significant pushback around that issue. So I think that on the ground, what we're seeing are people are sort of hiding behind their doors because they're afraid to step out. And now more than ever, we need all the voices at the table. And we do see some good coalitions going on. Prop 1 is one example, but there are some really good coalitions going on to support the way that we want to live here in America.
Libby.
Well, you know, going back to the George Bush presidential campaign, where marriage equality was made into the talking point and the boogeyman, and you know, we were targeted. We've always been the target once we all came out and we were much more part of the society, you know. Before, you know, in the 60s, 50s, 40s, we were all in the closet and, you know, just the whisper was enough to move the political needle. Now that many more of us are out, we're part of the community, we're elected officials, we're people at universities, we're doing all that, you know, we're there regardless. You know, we have always been, since I would say 1969, since Stonewall, the best punching bag for the what is now the nationalist Christian right, and unfortunately for the Republican Party. And now we're seeing the results of all of this.
Why is that, Libby? Why is it been? Why do you think? I don't disagree with you, but why do you think you have been the punching bag and able to elicit such fear even to this point in this election year?
Just go to Leviticus 22. Okay, all you need to do is go to Leviticus 22.
I left it on the desk.
Right.
I'll check it out later.
Leviticus 22 says, man shall not lie with man as with a woman. The Bible also says you can't wear leather and linen together. You can't plant things next to each other, you know, that you can sell your daughter into slavery. All, you know, somebody should be stoned at the gates of the community, all this sort of stuff. But the Christian right, the Christian nationalists, focus on just Leviticus 22 because it makes us into the enemy of what they see as straight white Christian nation. And it's easy it was always easy to target us because many of us would just go back in the closet because of out of fear, you know. That's not happening as much now, but we have plenty of people who in southern states, in states where, you know, it's now illegal to provide trans care. It's, you know, it's still legal to fire people because we don't have a national non-discrimination act. People go back into the closet because they're fearful. And the Christian right plays on that fear, not just ours, but the fear of the other that they can then monopolize and use politically.
Tandra, talk a little bit about that fear and why you think it exists, and what ultimately we can do about it and countering it.
Well, I think Libby just really laid it all out in a sense of why is it. But I think in combating it, one of the things that I remember when gay marriage got passed and the vote literally came down to Ron McDonald in Saratoga. That
right.
was the last holding out vote. And I mention this because he lost his seat because of that. And the fact of all of the pushback and what he had to endure afterwards. So to answer your question, to go back to your question, I just wanted to make mention of that. I think education is really, really, really the key, and making space and making safe spaces for people to have like conversations like this panel. You know, this is not every day. But I also want to bring to light that there's also this real strong resiliency in not only just like in New York State, and I travel all the way around the country, but I always can't wait to get back home. But there is also power in our gay voices, our collective LGBTQI voices. You know, I know, you know, in the Capital Region, and I don't know if Libby can also attest to this, is that you know, folks need to have that gay vote to be able to win election really in the Capital Region. You need to have that gay vote. And so I'm hoping that I'm answering your question of kind of what can we do to combat it. And I think it is really the education wise, boots on the ground, allowing our allies to be able to be accomplices for us. They need to step up for us often and make space if it's safe for them to step up. But to make space for that and to organize ourselves and educate ourselves.
It is a special edition of the Roundtable this Thursday morning. We have an amazing panel. We'll be coming back to them in just a moment to further discuss LGBTQIA+ issues during this election season. We will do all of that, but first, go back to Pledge Central.
1-800-323-9262. I'm Sarah LaDuke.
I'm Ray Graff.
And we're here to remind you that the fund drive begins on Monday morning. The full fund drive kicks off 6 a.m. Monday morning. That's October 14th, 4 days from today.
Ooh.
But ahead of that, we're presenting special roundtable panels with special guests on issues that listeners have told us they want to hear more programming on. And that's what we're presenting this morning as we try to get money in the lockbox ahead of the fund drive to shorten the fund drive.
1-800-323-9262. That's the telephone number. You can pledge online at wamc.org. It is what we strive to do, is provide a big perspective on the world to all of our listeners. It's a big tent. Everyone's welcome into this pool, 800-323-9262 or wamc.org. Now, we have a lot of money to raise, and we have a fund drive that officially kicks off, wall-to-wall fund drive.
That's right.
Monday morning at 6 a.m. And given the past couple of weeks, I'm sure Sarah LaDuke will be there for every hour on the air.
Everybody's going to show up. We'll kind of flip a switch and become full fund drive. It's where we live, as we say at WAMC. We can't do our other work if we don't help out with the fund drive. So plenty of people will be on the air reminding you why it's important to give and telling you the phone number and website incessantly.
You know, it has been a great morning. I've been listening to you and
David Gustina.
David, that's the guy.
Once again, you do know who that is.
Okay, fine. And, you know, everybody is getting it and everybody is pledging. And if you're not one of those everybodies, then get in there now. 800-323-9262. Thanks to Anonymous of Hudson Falls, New York. Andrea of New York, New York says, thanks for all you do. I live in NYC and Copaic Lake and so glad I can listen wherever I am. And thanks to Tara in Niskayuna, who is a
New Ding. Member.
New member. Thank you all.
1-800-323-9262 or wamc.org. The total raised so far in the lockbox is $404,987. An incredible showing. We're so grateful for everybody, to everybody who has given so far. But the total we need to raise before the fund drive is over next week, hopefully next week, is $1.25 million. So there is still quite a little ways to go, but we're so grateful and appreciative of how far we've come thus far. Far.
So that reminds me, and you make a great point, we have $845,000 to raise.
Yes.
So if you're listening and you got an extra $845,000, now's the time. WAMC.org or 800-323-9262.
1-800-323-9262. Thanks to Joyce in Hyde Park, New York, who says, I am Miss Allen. I wish you'd come on and say hello. Thanks to Sue in Saratoga Springs, New York, who says, what's not to love about WAMC? We heard from Luann in Slingerlands, New York, and Mary in Burnt Hills, New York. 800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. We're going to go back to our special LGBTQAI+ panel in just a couple of minutes. But in the meantime, we are hoping to hear from some more people. 800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262.
Every now and then I hear a very low hum.
It's the refrigerator when the door opens.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you are. And so must be an old-timer, that refrigerator in there.
Maybe.
We should get an ice box. It's a little quieter. You know? Have the Iceman come.
Sure.
Iceman cometh. 800-323-9262. Hey, let's pledge. And remember, when we go back to this roundtable panel, this special edition, one of a series we have been giving you over the last few weeks, when we go back to that panel, you can still pledge. You can make the phones ring. We have volunteers here at 800-323-9262 or pledge online while you listen, wamc.org.
Thank you to Margaret in Lenox, Massachusetts, and Barbara in Del Mar, New York, who loves the new format.
And what is the new format?
The new format is these special roundtable panels, you know, extra guests, focused topics.
A specific topic.
And we, you know, interrupt occasionally instead of with underwriting breaks, although we, of course, value our underwriters and can't live without them either. We remind you to help us please fill the lockbox ahead of the fund drive.
Right. And I think we're almost out of time here, right?
We are, yes.
Okay, so I won't wax eloquently about the underwriters, but we'll do that later on.
Sure, let's do that later. 800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. Please continue pledging. Please continue helping the station. And please enjoy the roundtable panel. Take it away, Joe.
Thanks very much, Sarah. Thank you to Ray, and thanks to all of you who are helping us make the money this morning. We appreciate it. Welcome back to a special roundtable edition as we discuss LGBTQIA+ issues this election season. So last night, as I was watching the Philadelphia Phillies get destroyed by the New York Mets.
Oh, by the way, I'm just so
I know.
So sorry.
I know. I'm the Phillies fan. But look,
Mets.
I'll tell you this. Congratulations to the Mets. They were on fire. They've been on fire. And no one deserved to win that game more. So I'm done. Anyway, oh my God, the ads, the political ads. Oh dear Lord. So I want to talk about this a little bit because these are from a PAC, and they are incessant. They run all the time. They are for the Trump campaign, and they are very anti-trans. They are very homophobic. There is a tagline in them that comes out and says Kamala is for them. President Trump is for you. It's airing all the time. Some of it, I believe, is AI generated. I don't know if that's the case or not. They have Kamala Harris saying that she is going to offer surgery to prisoners and every prisoner. And it doesn't sound right, but it doesn't even matter. It's just taken out of context. But anyway, I'm curious as to, and Courtney, let's begin with you on this, of just what kind of damage an ad like that does, not just in a campaign of one candidate over another, but for an entire community.
I mean, this isn't new, right? Like the idea that there's like this focus on pronouns. When they said, when I watched that and I said, they, them, and his for you, I'm like, I'm also a you.
Yeah, that, there you go. Right. Yeah,
like a, we're all you. You are us. Anyway, right, like this idea that this is a like a language or a campaign of fear, and so the way it's specifically targeting trans people, this isn't new. These are the same tropes. We're just regurgitating them to different groups. And we were talking about power just before the break, and I was thinking to myself in this idea about power, it's not just about LGBTQ plus people, right? It's about maintaining power, and you can plan. You know, there's a guy and a girl and they get married and that's the thing. You can plan for that. But gay and lesbian people have always challenged that that's the only structure of power, right? Gay men, lesbian women. And so because they challenge that gender structure and trans people challenge that gender structure, we become the target because we disrupt the opportunity of that. And so like that kind of fear campaign just plagues on people's misunderstandings, non-information, the misinformation that we put in schools for so long, and unfortunately continues to silence and make trans and non-binary people extra afraid of being who they are, especially young people who are seeing those campaigns.
Libby, you're our political consultant. Let me ask you this question about how this is being used in races such as in Montana, where there are there are ads for the John Tester, an endangered Democrat up for re-election, is too liberal because of his support of transgender women in sports and bathrooms. It's also the case in Ohio with Sherrod Brown. Mm-hmm. And the leading Republican super PAC has touched on transgender topics and accusing Brown of allowing transgender biological males in girls' sports. So these ads in and of themselves are disturbing. What is even perhaps more disturbing is they're working.
Yeah, and they will continue to work. I mean, they're not going after the L's and the G's anymore because that doesn't work. Because everybody knows somebody who's gay or lesbian, and marriage equality is now the law of the land, and blah blah blah. And how many people haven't gone to a wedding of a gay or a lesbian couple? I mean, I'm sure there are people who haven't, but the trans issue is something people just can't wrap their heads around. They just don't get it. Why would a man give up male privilege to transition to be a woman? They just don't understand that. That was the argument against gay men, you know, in the 60s and 70s, but then things got normalized, you know. And then you've got a woman becoming a man. You mean a woman's going to have male privilege now? And what does that mean? So I think that's part of it, but people don't think at that level. I don't think anybody's really thinking at that high of a level, but it's fear. They're able to trade on people's fear of the unknown and what they don't understand, and their preachers are telling them that this is the devil incarnate, that this is, you know, the devil is coming to take your kids away. Anybody, if they're 5 years old, they can go and get surgery, which we all know isn't true. If they're 5 years old, they can go on on the drugs, which we know isn't true. You know, this is about letting people be their true selves, and the MAGA Republicans, not the Rockefeller Republicans, not the rational ones, not the Liz Cheney's of the world, although who knows where she is on this issue, but the MAGA Republicans and the National Christians, right, wants to continue to demonize and make people afraid. And it, you know, in 20, 30 years from now, this may no longer be an issue. It took that long for the lesbian and gay issue to sort of become mainstreamed.
Right.
But it does take time, but people can't wrap their heads around it, and they're afraid of what they can't wrap their heads around. And these ads are helping people reinforce their bias. It's bias confirmation.
I mean, one of the things that I found so insidious is that there's lines in there about they're turning our children into dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
The other thing, and Ron, I'd like you to to address this is even Republicans acknowledge that there are really very few instances in which transgender athletes are competing in youth sports. But that doesn't matter. Don't confuse me with the details, because it's still an issue that it could happen.
Yeah. So while everyone's been talking, one of the things with trans in sports that is a really important thing to elevate is that we're talking about less than 1% of people, even less than probably 0.1% of people. Also, the Olympics have handled trans people competing in sports. The governing body for international athletics has taken science and used science to make decisions about this. And when new issues come up, they handle it perfectly fine. So this isn't about rational, logical thinking. It also isn't about women's equality. It is about fear, hate, and bias. You know, Miss Major, who's a Stonewall veteran, I was lucky enough to hear her speak from her perspective. And one of the things that she shared is that we've made so many advances, not only for LGB, but for the trans community, for the gender nonconforming, non-binary communities. And, you know, that fear escalates as we become more visible, as we become more seen. And so that's why in New York State, it's really important, the work that we're doing here for the Hate and Bias Prevention Unit in New York State Division of Human Rights. We go out and we have regional councils all across the state where we bring people from all different diverse backgrounds, all different sexualities, gender identities, as well as race and other identifications. And we bring people together and we work with them to find ways to find common ground, to educate, to make people more aware. Because I think when people get educated, as we've seen with the lesbian, gays, and marriage equality in that movement, changing hearts and minds, making people see that our marriages were no different than any other marriages. It's just two people who want to spend their life together. I think that makes a really powerful difference. But it is really important to note that there are some real serious issues of hate and bias happening. And there's a hotline here in New York State, 844-NO-TO-HATE. And you can go on to DHR's website at dhr.ny.gov. and submit an incident, and we definitely are here. DHR can't support if communities don't report.
Tandra, I know we're going to, you have to step out for a meeting, so I want to get your thoughts on this before we say goodbye to you, and thank you for your time, of course, this morning, but also to have you just address what we've been talking about here.
You know, I think, you know, all of the panelists did an amazing job and narrowing it down to really the basic of fear, hate, and such a focus on the fact that there is a lack of power, well, not lack of power, but that it's really focused around power. You know, I remember when we did, and I don't know if you remember this, but when we did I Am Gay campaign years ago in the city of the Tri-City area of Capital Region, we received so many phone calls, and the phone calls were related to these billboards turning our children into gay. Yeah. And I remember doing an interview, and the other part of it was is our taxpayer dollars that are putting up these billboards. I'm like, yeah, well, they're my taxpayer dollars as well. And I was probably one of those kids, like many others, is like, absolutely, that when you were growing up and trying to navigate your identity, and that if you could only have had the choice to just drive by a billboard and say, I'm straight now, people would have probably been able to take that if they needed to. So it's a lot of the narrative is just so really ridiculous in so many ways, but people actually believe and they buy into it. And the harm for our folks that are really our children, and able to see that they are, that they're, the lack of these safe spaces for them when they're watching television.
Right.
And it's just this act, it's just really just these acts of violence, and it all boils down to the power and how you hold those power structure. And again, like everyone else say, is just, you know, how we're socialized on this very binary way of thinking. And I agree, it's harmful. It, and what we can continue to do is, you know, is continue to educate folks. I like to say, we just ran, I think Courtney is aware, is also aware of this. We have Trans Day of Remembrance coming up. We partner with Courtney. We ran probably the most billboards in the Capital Region that was all led by TGNC folks. And we're getting ready to do another series of those billboards. Those billboards they get vandalized at times. We do get a lot of comments, but we're going to continue to run these billboards because they're important to make space.
Visibility matters.
Absolutely. Tandra Lagrone is Chief Executive Officer of In Our Voices. Tandra, thank you so much for being a part of our conversation and for joining us this morning. I so appreciate your input as well as the incredible work you do throughout our communities.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Thank you very much.
And the last thing I would say is that please exercise your right to vote. Mm-hmm. Please, please, please.
Absolutely. Tandra Lagrone, thank you very much. We will continue with our panel after we make a stop over in Pledge Central.
Thanks, Joe. The number here is 800-323-9262 if you want to make your pledge, and we hope you do. WAMC.org for a secure online pledge. I'm Ray.
I'm Sarah.
The volunteers are over there. Hello, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. 1-800-323-9262. That is the phone number you can call to pledge to donate to WAMC to help us fill the lockbox and shorten next week's fund drive. 1-800-323-9262. I want to thank Joanna in South Hadley. A gift was given in honor of Libby Post, an acknowledgement of her knowledge of LGBTQ history and her regular participation in the roundtable. Joanne looks forward to hearing from more self-identified LGBTQ people on future roundtable panels. 800-323-9262 or WAMC.org.
And Sarah LaDuke, we have already crashed through the $405,000 mark in this drive.
Incredible.
$405,267.
That's really great.
That's the wonderful news. The less wonderful news is that we have $844,000 in change to raise in this fund drive. The full fund drive, wall-to-wall fund drive, begins on Monday morning at 6 a.m. The goal here over the next couple of days and over the weekend is to fill the lockbox as much as we can. You have done a miraculous job. We've shortened this fund drive by probably four days. Really, really good days, or 4 days. So beautiful job. Let's keep going. 800-323-9262.
1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. Ray and I are with you for just a few, like another minute and a half or so.
Okay.
And then we will send you back to the roundtable panel to continue hearing this important discussion about LGBTQAI plus rights and issues.
And if you want a premium, by the way, we still have some of these new premiums. They are a WAMC Vote Be Heard t-shirt. It's a black tee. It's beautiful with a WAMC logo in yellow and orange and the microphone and the
radiation.
And then the back of it has a big, big saying, and it says vote, but the V is a check mark like you're making your selection. It says vote, be heard. It's a $120 pledge, but if you want to be a sustainer, it's only $10 a month to be a $120 sustainer, and sustainers do so much for us. We encourage you to think about that when you make your pledge, but I encourage you to make a pledge. 800-323-9262.
Thank you to Karen, a new member in Cooperstown, New York. We heard from John in Hopewell Junction, New York, who says, every 4 years, I, as a gay man, am subjected to a public verbal gay bashing by the Republican Party. And let's be clear, the attacks on trans people are just recycled 1990s attacks on gay men and are designed to make it acceptable to once again attack gay men and lesbians. They think we Gen X gays and lesbians haven't noticed that the attacks are the same and they need to think again. We know what they're you're up to. That's from John. We heard from Jason in Poughkeepsie, New York. Love the station, donating through the app. So glad to have this. But the most important thing for me in this year's election is to keep the public service loan forgiveness going. I only have 6 more months. And we heard from Evan in Cambridge, New York. Thank you, everybody, for giving. Please keep ringing the phones and pledging online at WAMC.org. And with that, Ray, let's go back to the panel, okay?
Okay.
Okay, take it away, Joe.
Thank you very much to both Ray and Sarah. Appreciate it very much. We just have about 10 minutes or so before we go back at the top of the hour. We're also going to lose this particular iteration of the panel. So what I would like to do as we talk in this special roundtable edition about LGBTQIA issues is go around the room and just hear some thoughts from all of our panelists. Let me begin with Courtney, who I know one of the things you wanted to talk about were some of the other letters that we've been talking about this morning.
I think gay and lesbian becomes a focus when we're first coming out into the community, and then our bi-pan plus asexual, intersex, et cetera, communities that get kind of lumped into that letter. Often we don't really see what the impact is on them, but bi-pan plus is one of the biggest parts of our communities who often don't feel connected to the larger LGBTQ community. And I'm saying this in the same context of how we're talking about trans communities, because there are people in the LGB plus community who haven't supported trans communities, who haven't supported trans communities in the past and are not about it now. We have to come together across this acronym. That's where our power lies. Asexual communities get targeted at work for not being interested in relationships, for not responding to questions about their intimate lives, for being sexualized. Our bi-pan communities don't feel connected, that they can come to Pride, they get targeted and think that they're straight, that they're not in those spaces, but they're experiencing marginalization in our LGB spaces. And then also if they happen to be in heterosexual spaces for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So we really have to be able to bridge those divides. When we talk about, you know, whatever your identity is and crowd that spectrum, we get pushed together. We wouldn't otherwise know each other. We get pushed together because we are facing a similar oppressor, not a similar oppression, mm-hmm. but a similar oppressor. And so the more we come together and bridge that divide and get educated and get connected to one another, the more powerful we'll be. And I want to invite everybody to the table on that, especially for trans lives, especially as well.
It's a great point. Ron.
Yeah, you know, I would add off of Courtney, like, that's why I was formerly the governor's director of LGBTQ affairs. And, you know, I was the first openly pansexual and gender nonconforming director for a governor in this state. And it's really important to identify yourself and to use those identifications, because most people would identify me as more of a gay man. And so it's really important for others in our community, part of that LGBTQIA plus, to have that. Also, I was the LGBTQ director. I wasn't the LGBTQIA plus director. And we do have a convening that's the LGBTQIA plus convening. And the convening did focus on issues that impact all of the letters. Our office has not done as much work in the intersex and asexual communities. And that's something that we were moving towards and working towards to make sure that we include all of it. You know, Proposition 1 was talked about earlier, and the Division of Human Rights is based on the human rights law. A lot of the things in that proposition are just reinforcing on a constitutional level the stuff that the Division of Human Rights already enforces. So this, like, theory that it's something new, it's something different, and it's something scary is just incorrect. We already do protections in New York State that are based on most of the protected classes in this, and this would just be changing it into our Constitution. I think New Yorkers really do stand for diversity and respecting each other, and so I think Proposition 1 is about respecting each other. You know, the lieutenant governor often talks about hate not being natural. We're taught to hate. Love is actually natural. A baby loves naturally, and they don't have hate until they're taught to hate. And, you know, this talking of turning kids into, I was raised by 2 straight parents in a very straight community. They didn't turn me straight. So no one can turn kids into anything. And, you know, with that, there was talk of Trans Day of Remembrance. It's the 25th anniversary this year of Trans Day of Remembrance, the 25th year, because we've existed forever. All of us, all of the LGBTQIA plus, it's not some acronym that no one's heard of. We've existed forever. The 25th anniversary is the 25th anniversary of people being killed because of their identity. because of being trans. And that's just not okay. That's hate that's taught, and we really need to love.
Thank you very much, Ron. I just want to give the phone number again for people who are looking for more information on the work that you do. It's 844-NO, and it's the number 2, right?
Yeah.
No to, number 2, hate. No to hate. 844-NO-TO-HATE. Gwen, I want to check in with you as well, talking about the ballot proposition, and you said something that just struck me because it's there, but you got to flip that ballot over. You got to do a little origami to get that going.
Absolutely. You know, we're not used to that in the state of New York. And in fact, the last ballot prop, we missed a lot of people because people didn't know. People didn't think to flip that ballot. And I think particularly when we have these electronic ballots, you know, you fill in your little bubbles and then stick it in the machine and that's that. So I want people to be very cognizant of the fact that you need to flip your ballot over. And voting yes on Prop 1 does what Ron said, which is it really does immoralize all of those protections by making it constitutional, not legislative. You know, the thing about legislative is that it's a law, and laws can be undone by a legislature. Your constitution is your governing document. That's what states how the state operates, and who it protects is extremely important. And I think a lot of people think that Prop 1 is really focused on the abortion issue. It's much broader than that. It is so much broader than that. And, you know, as it stands, what we've seen happen in terms of certain protections, people say, well, in New York State, we don't have to worry about abortion. It's, you know, we have a law. Well, that law could be changed, as we've seen happen on the federal level. So putting it in the Constitution makes it that much harder for that to happen. And the same is true of LGBTQIA issues, that the protections that we currently have, the protections, for example, for gay marriage and things of that nature, could be taken away through a legislative act. And putting it in the Constitution makes it that much harder for those kinds of issues to be eradicated. So please, please, please vote and then flip that ballot before you put it in the machine.
And Libby, real quick, and because I have to want to say goodbye to everybody here properly, but I mean, the other thing, too, is that we think of these, we're all talking, WAMC goes to 7 states, but, and we're talking about New York, and we think of New York as a very liberal state, but you can never take that for granted.
No, you can't take it for granted. I mean, Trump's coming to the Madison Square Garden, or he wants to, thinking he can, you know, turn this state red, which, okay, that's not going to happen. However, we've got some crucial congressional races down on Long Island where we some blue districts flipped to red and we lost control of Congress. Those are, I was reading this morning, one of them is leaning D, and then all the rest of them, except for one all the way out east, New York one, is a toss-up. And so, you know, people need to vote on Long Island, and I'm sure that they will. But what Gwen said about the proposition, I did a library thing once and the prop was on the other side. So we made apple turnovers and said, turn over, you know, your ballot. And so it's really, really, it's very, very important. It's crucial that A, people register to vote. If you don't have it, if you have to vote absentee, do go online and fill out the form so you get your ballot absentee, or go, and early voting starts on the 26th, Saturday the 26th, and it runs through Sunday, November 3rd. People need to turn out to vote because we need New York to remain a democratic state that protects people. And that's who we are, that's who we've always been, and that's who we need to continue to be.
We're going to have a whole other hour of discussion on these issues. Libby's going to stay with us. So we'll continue to hear from her and bring in some new guests as well. This gives me the opportunity to thank the wonderful folks who have joined us for this hour. Ron Zaki, Senior Director of New York State Hate and Bias Prevention Unit at Division of Human Rights. Ron, thank you so much for your thoughtful comments and for the incredible work you do. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
And Courtney DeAllard, Associate Director of Intercultural Student Engagement at UAlbany. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
And Gwen Wright, community activist, former executive director of the New York State Office for the Prevention of Domestic Violence. Always wonderful to see you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We will continue. First, we go over to a legal ID and then Pledge Central.
Support comes from Halter Associates Realty, locally grown and woman-owned, with roots in the Catskills and Hudson Valley, specializing in helping sellers unlock value in their homes, land, and estates. HalterAssociatesRealty.com. Woodland Pond at New Paltz, a lifespan community at the foot of the Schwangunks, near education, the arts, and outdoor activities. Future residency waitlist available, woodlandpondnp.org. Epigraph Publishing Service, Rhinebeck, New York, providing authors with custom and on-demand publishing services for all types of books, including editing, design, printing, marketing, and distribution. EpigraphPS.com. Friends of Chamber Music, presenting Imani Wins, The French Connection, October 13th, 3 p.m., the Massery Center, College of St. Rose. Ticket information at friendsofchambermusic.org. And the Berkshire Health System's Nurse Line, a community service connecting patients to care options. Weekdays, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., 855-855-2000.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC-FM HD 90.3 Albany, WRUN HD 90.3 Remsen Utica, WAMK HD 90.9 Kingston, WOSR HD 91.7 Middletown, WCEL HD 91.9 Plattsburgh, WCAN HD 93.3 Canajoharie, WANC HD 1039 Ticonderoga, WAMQ HD 1051 Great Barrington, WWES HD 88.9 Mount Kisco, WANZ HD 90.1 Stamford, WANR 88.5 Brewster, WQQQ 1033 Sharon, WAMC AM 1400 Albany.
Oh, we're on.
We are on.
Oh,
just.
Hello.
Hi, Ray.
Hi, Sarah.
1-800-323-9260.
You're stilted open.
Are
that
you,
was.
Are you so giddy from the Mets win last night that you forgot how to do the radio?
Well, some people have said I forgot how to do radio many years ago.
Hardly,
but
hardly.
You know what? I'll just give the number. 800-323-9262. Here's a news flash. Mark your calendar if you're at home. Not if you're driving, but mark your calendar or the thing on your device. 6 a.m. Monday. That's a very important thing to put in your calendar. You know why?
Why?
Because the fund drive, the full-blown, wall-to-wall fundraising fund drive, begins on Monday morning at 6 a.m. Why are we doing what we're doing right now?
We are trying to shorten the fund drive by getting a lot of money toward our goal in the lockbox, and we are trying to motivate people to donate to the station by providing issue-focused special roundtable panels ahead of the fund drive. Excuse me for my throat clearing.
That's all right. Great expectations. 1-800-323-9260.
1-800-323-9260. So far in the lockbox, we've raised $405,757.
Yeah.
Any way you slice it, a great deal of money, a tremendously generous outpouring from our listeners and members. But we need $1.25 million before the fund drive is over. We've done it before. We'll do it again. But let's do it, you know, ASAP.
You know, 3,056 people have already put in during the lockbox portion over the last couple of weeks. And so to you, I say thank you. And if you're listening and you're hearing me now and you haven't done that, I say, what are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for?
Every dollar we raise.
They could be waiting for payday. That's okay.
Well, you know what? That's a great point. Don't do it if you can't do it. But if you have a little money, this station rides on the back of two main cogs, if you will. Our underwriters, who I promise to just mention again.
Yes, indeed.
Could because so many of the underwriters have been with us so long, and through thick and thin, through pandemics, through recessions, yada, 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 they have stuck with us. Why? Because A, it works for them. They get customers. B, they're hitching their wagon to something that is real. WAMC is real. It is member supported. That's the other cog. You come in at home. You support this station. It's yours. It's ours. It's all of ours. 800-323-9262. Let's make the phones ring. Let's fill that lockbox.
1-800-323-9262. We are presenting a special panel this morning, a lockbox special. A special lockbox panel. That's how we call
them.
A special lockbox panel. 800-323-9262 about LGBTQAI plus rights and actions and issues in the community. And by the community, we mean the world, the region, everywhere. 800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262. The next hour will be Joe Donahue with Libby Post and two new guests, Stephen Hengst and Kevin from other organizations. I do know, but they're not in front of me
right
now.
They're not in front of you right now.
Yes,
and,
so I apologize.
You know, in front of me right now?
Some people to thank.
Here we go. Thanks to Christine in New Hamburg, New York. Thanks to Anonymous in Accord. Is it Accord? I never
heard Accord.
Accord. I thought it was Accord.
I'm not sure.
Who is a, dang it, new member.
Welcome.
And Anonymous in Accord says, for my trans kid and all the trans kids that need a supportive parent, I'm your mom too. And thanks to Jill in Lee, Massachusetts, in honor of my beautiful trans daughter, says Jill. Thanks to Charles in Hopewell Junction, New York. I've been a regular listener to WMC since moving to the Hudson Valley 22 years ago. Hey, welcome aboard. I know you're an existing member, but great to hear from you. I love being a sustaining member, have been a sustaining member for 5 years. Also donate during every pledge drive.
Wow.
Okay, so Charles in Hopewell Junction is one of those people that
really loves the place, and we're so thankful.
I'm in every month as a sustainer, but you know what? Here's a little more for the fun drive, and God bless you, Charles. Charles goes on, I love the roundtable panel, the media project, the midday weather, Joe Donahue's interviews, Ray Graff. We love you too. 800-323-9262.
1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. Please keep supporting the station, and we return now to the roundtable panel.
Thank you very much, Sarah LaDuke, and to Ray Graff. I so appreciate you and for all the great work that you are doing this morning, and of course our listeners who are standing up and doing what they need to do. So we appreciate that very, very much. Again, my thanks to our first hour guests. We moved from one studio to another, and Libby and I walked into another studio, and we have two new guests. So let me introduce them to you, and then we'll get started with them and continue our conversation this morning. Libby Post continues with us, political consultant, lobbyist, regular roundtable panelist, my left hand. Hello, how are you?
I'm really good, sort of, kind of, but I'm good.
All right. Oh, just fake it like you know, can do.
Yeah, all the time.
We also welcome Kevin Bailey, founder of Come Out Central New York. Kevin, good morning. Thank you so much for being with
us. Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
A delight to have you on the program. We also welcome Stephen Hanks, co-founder and executive director of Big Gay Hudson Valley. Always a pleasure. Good to see you again.
Joe, great to see you. Libby, great to see you as well. Love being here in the studio at WAMC and appreciate the opportunity to chat with you both.
Well, thank you very much. We were talking in the first hour about a lot of issues and a lot of things, and certainly about this entire series that we've been doing over the last several weeks is about important election issues. So I would like to give you both the opportunity to talk about the importance of the election. I know it is not the primary focus of the work that you do, although politics is at the root of really everything that we do, isn't it? And especially this time of year, and especially given these issues.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, I think, you know, Kevin and myself, we both run organizations that connect communities, bring the queer community together, and build relationships, help to continue to expand business programs, and drive a tremendous amount of tourism throughout New York State. But, you know, one of the we're actually working on putting a conference together right now called the Empire State of Pride, which is bringing Pride organizers together from across New York State to make all of our prides bigger, better, more fabulous, and to make our communities even stronger. But, you know, when we talk about politics and pride, you know, we've got some great examples from the field. I'm going to let Kevin share this story with you. But we were speaking with an organizer the other day in Cazenovia, New York.
Yes.
Who's really had a tremendous impact on their local politics. But it all started with pride.
Yes. So there's an organizer and business owner in Cazenovia, Travis Barlongo, also known as Anita Buffum. And Travis is a drag queen and the first drag queen elected to a school board. And so, you know, Travis owns a great little retail shop and cafe called H-Gray Supply Company. And Travis, just through relationships in the community that he's built, has really had a tremendous impact and raised the visibility of LGBTQ people and issues. And he's been running Cazenovia Pride for 4 years now.
Why do people lose their crap over drag queens?
It's a mystery to me. You know, I think we have a lot more serious things to be worried about when it comes to the safety of our children. For example, like guns, than we've ever, there's no evidence of any harm to children from drag queens. And yeah. So
drag queens are an easy target for a lot of people. Just unfortunately, just like the trans community, you know, and just as we talked about in the first hour, you know, everyone sort of picked on the L, the G, the B for a while in the alphabet soup of our community. And now, unfortunately, people have moved on to the T portion. And some people confuse that with drag. And, you know, it's not great for any of our communities. And it puts us all at risk.
So why then? It seems to me then a large part of what you do then is not only to support your community, but also outside of that community to educate.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a huge part of bringing community together, whether it be in the Big Gay Hudson Valley or whether it be in, you know, with Come Out Central New York, it's making sure introductions happen, building relationships. And, you know, one of the things that we've always done at Big Gay Hudson Valley is invite all of our local elected officials on both sides of the fence to all of our events. And we are in a series of districts because we cover so many counties where, you know, we have incredibly moderate Republicans like Rob Rollison in our district. You know, Rob has, you know, Rob has done a great job being a friend of the LGBTQ community. I don't agree with his stance on a lot of issues, but when it comes to the queer community, he's a big supporter, you know, as an elected official and as a friend. When it comes to our county executive in Dutchess County, Sue Serino, Sue's also a Republican, but Sue comes out, she shows up, she has a presence at Poughkeepsie Pride, she comes out to events like Pride in the Sky. But then we're also fortunate to have folks like Jen Metzger and Pat Ryan and, you know, individuals like Yolanda Bostic-Williams, the head of diversity for New York State Parks. You know, we have these individuals gather at all of our events and the community gets to meet them. They get to meet the community and conversations are had. And, you know, I always have been a strong believer that it's really hard to hate and discriminate against someone once you know someone. So when people always say, oh, I don't know any gay people, chances are you probably do if you don't think you do. So we like to make sure that everyone gets to meet us wherever we are and they can all see that we're all just part of our community all across New York State.
And a huge part of the mission of Come Out Central New York is queer visibility in the community. So our flagship events, Syracuse Gorilla Gay Bar and Syracuse Gorilla Gay Cafe, are pop-up events. So they're open to everybody. They are takeover events at nominally straight venues, you know, with big quotes around it. So it's introducing business owners to the economic power of the queer community. You know, I'm often told that our events are the, you know, highest grossing events of that day in a year. And so to Stephen's point, if they see you and they meet you and they realize that you're just fabulous, normal people, they're much less likely to be able to hate you. And so, yeah, like I said, the queer visibility component is just crucially important to the work that Come Out Central New York is doing there.
I want to just go to something that I mentioned at the beginning of the program at the top of the hour at 9 o'clock, which was in our introduction. And I think it's and I brought it up in the introduction as a way of kind of putting a bookmark into the discussion for this particular hour. But we look at how the community, the LGBTQIA plus community, has gained increased visibility, and especially with Pride events across not only New York, but across the a country and across the globe. Mm. And this has been beneficial and has certainly been a very big deal. And as both of you mentioned, very good for the communities that are, and I'm talking about the towns, the villages, the counties, the state of people who are coming and are taking part in these. But this year we saw this backlash, and we saw this backlash, and I mentioned Target and I mentioned Bud Light, and you have pride themed merchandising, and then LGBTQ influencers get involved, and because they're partnering with these companies, it is something that has created a backlash to the point where the companies then pull back. I'm just interested in how damaging that is and how groups like yours work to overcome that.
Sure. You know, and Joe, it's a good point. You know, Kevin and I were talking about this yesterday. You know, I spent 3 years as executive director of the Provincetown Business Guild, and we had a lot of large organizations, corporate sponsors that underwrote a lot of what we did there. And there were a number of brands that, particularly when this backlash started, they all stepped back from the work that they were doing and the support that they provided. And you know, in any situation, a company's got to walk its talk. And so, you know, you can truly know where a company sits by whether it takes a stand and says, we're not going to bow to this pressure because this is something that we believe in our corporate culture. And it's not just some person in the marketing department saying, wait, we can't underwrite all these pride events because we're getting backlash from a silent minority about this. But, you know, a lot of what we're doing now is helping smaller groups, mid-sized groups, large groups across the state understand that there's so many other organizations that we can work with that are locally based, that are willing to support our pride organizations, that are willing to support our causes and our rights. There are so many opportunities to work with employee resource groups within large organizations across New York State and across the country. You know, ERGs are set up within large corporations like National Grid or within
ERG being
an employee resource group.
Okay.
And the employee resource group, particularly in, you know, for a company like Westchester Medical Center, they have an employee resource group that represents gay and lesbian employees. So does Hudson Valley Credit Union. And in many cases, we work with the ERGs directly because those employees advocate on behalf of LGBTQ causes to the organizations. And they are the ones that we've been working with to say, hey, we're looking for sponsors to help support a Pride March or a festival or whatever it may be. So as larger corporations have pulled marketing dollars, there are ways to work with the groups of employees to advocate within the organizations. And in many ways, that's more effective, at least for all of us. The dollars might not be as significant, but they're dollars that in many ways matter because they are coming from the local community and the people on the ground in those communities.
And I don't mean to sound like they're being disingenuous, but you look at like companies that like Target and Bud Light, and there are many others. I'm just using those because the come to my mind the first. But
Tractor Supply.
But these are companies that, I mean, they were marketing. They were going to do the marketing in the first place because they knew they could make money off.
Mm-hmm.
Of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like they saw the market there in the first place, and they were doing the right thing until they decided not to.
Some of it has to do with the DEI training.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right, and so the Christian Nationalists started pushing back against Tractor Supply and some other companies too. I think Ford. And you know, oh my God, it's the new three-letter boogeyman, DEI, yep. Right? Yep. You know, it used to be LGBT. Now it's DEI. And what does that mean? Diversity, equity, inclusion. What's wrong with those words? Absolutely nothing.
No.
But they don't want to do the work. They don't think that we should be part of it. They don't think people of color should be part of anything. Mm. You know, I remember having a conversation with a legislator on a benign bill in Congress. It was a bill, you know, to help people, right, mm-hmm. with a certain disease. And because the word diversity was in the bill, because they wanted a diverse group of people to be part of whatever governing body there was going to be around this bill, the bill got held just because it said diversity. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is how absurd things have gotten, where, you know, they take these three letters. All those words mean is let's make sure that people are included and that your organization reflects the reality of our lives and our country, and have turned it into the worst thing possible. And so the Christian nationalists because of their pride presentations, they targeted Tractor Supply, Ford, and other big corporations who are now pulling back from their DEI initiatives, which will ultimately hurt them. Because you know what, folks? We've got money to spend.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We do.
And it's just that simple. We have money to spend. There's a reason why Target had pride displays up in June. It's because they want us to come into the store. We know that Target is usually a little more friendlier than Walmart, mm-hmm. right? Politically, we do know that.
Yep.
The Walton family is bankrolls the Heritage Foundation and other ultra-right groups. Target doesn't. And so, you know, we go there instead. You know, it's like I choose which stores I walk into. You'll never find me in Hobby Lobby. You'll never find me in Chick-fil-A.
I was going to ask Libby if you enjoy a Chick-fil-A
sandwich.
Tell you the last time I've eaten a Chick-fil-A.
I've never, ever, ever eaten
And I was
Chick-fil-A.
Profoundly disappointed to see that all of the rest stops along 90 now have
Chick-fil-A. Except on Sundays.
In the airport, and then they're still closed on Sunday, which is just
And there's going to be one up on Central Avenue.
No, and they're moved. Yeah, they've moved in. I mean, I grew up with them up in Philadelphia. And moment of silence for the Philadelphia Phillies. Okay. But I grew up and Chick-fil-A was around, and I at that point nobody was talking about, they were closed on Sundays, and it was like, all right, well, that's not, there's like blue laws and so forth, and then all of a sudden it turned into something much worse. But let's applaud Subaru.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, good Lord.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Subaru, I drove here in mine today.
Right. I mean,
as did I.
Right. And me too. Yeah. It's, you know, the lesbian car of choice is the Outback. There's no two ways about it. We need to schlep stuff, and that's the car. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's, and people just, people laugh at me and say,
I want that to be the line.
Right.
We need to schlep
stuff, and that's the car.
That's
so,
why
you know,
I've
people,
got one.
When I said I finally got a Lesbaru, everyone was like, all my straight people, what are you talking about? And, you know, I had to explain all that. But yeah, Subaru is great, and they're not backing down because love is love.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And they're very clear, and that's their marketing, and they have cornered the market. I mean, they really have on LGBT purchases, and with good reason.
So let me go ahead.
I would love to say something, though, going back a bit to Libby's earlier comment about what is wrong with diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Nothing.
People, especially white men, are profoundly comfortable with the status quo. Profoundly comfortable. It has benefited them and them alone for a long time.
For the
record. And you can't see Kevin, he is a white
man. I am a white man. I am a cisgender white man speaking to you right now. And I am very well aware of my privilege in terms of how I have benefited from the status quo for so long. And so Stephen and I are both cisgender white men.
Gay
men. And part of our responsibility to the larger LGBTQIA plus community is to make sure that there is room at the table, at every table where we are invited, that there's room at the table for those people in marginalized communities, minoritized communities, whether that be women, whether that be people of color, trans, gender nonconforming. And Stephen and I both, with our organizations, have intentionally worked to create inclusive spaces. And so just people are profoundly scared of anything that threatens the status quo. And it is so easy. We live in a rage economy. Rage just generates so many profits. And most of these boycotts of these companies, most of the outrage against these companies is being generated by a few far-right influencers. And so it's fascinating. But it's being driven by the rage economy.
I was talking to a group of business owners about a week and a half ago who were all bemoaning the fact of what they had to put up with simply because in their small business, in their very small mom and pop store, that they had to, or mom and pop.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't forget those.
Yes. That they would put up a pride flag and the backlash that they would receive from that. And I remember one of the business owners said to me, she said, you know, we were always told, like, don't, you know, you don't mention your religion and politics when you're in business because you just want people to be able to come in and come into your store. But by the same token, a pride flag is a way of saying everyone is welcome. Mm-hmm. We welcome you. And why is that suddenly a flare that we are somehow politicizing the work that we do in selling hardware?
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm a business owner, but everybody knows what I do. It's all politics
right, all
the time. But it's up to the business owner as to what they want to do. Nobody's forcing them to do anything. You know, we're giving them an opportunity. Mm-hmm. If they want to show their support, they can. If they don't feel that they can for whatever reason, then don't. But then, you know, don't get upset when the same kind of store down the block that puts out a pride flag that we go there and do and give them our business. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I had the window on my car break the other day. I rolled it down, it fell off the rail, and I had to bring it to a garage.
Wow.
The first, not on my Subaru, on my much older other car.
Okay, great.
But I had to go, I walked into a body shop to get it repaired, and they were flying a Trump flag in the lobby. When I walked in, and I said, hi. I looked around, and I said, I'm having a problem with my window. She said, well, we can see it tomorrow. And I said, well, you know what? I don't like what I see in your foyer here, so I'm going to take my business somewhere else. And I turned around and I walked out.
Right.
And we as queer people and as allies can do that anywhere. And whether or not we voice that opinion or not, mm-hmm. it's very important. But, you know, I'm a true believer that people need to know why decisions are being made. You know, Kevin and I are working right now on this conference called the Empire State of Pride that we're doing in Syracuse in November. And we have pride organizers from all across the state gathering. And one of the number one questions we get from folks, particularly in northern New York, from Adirondacks Pride, lower Adirondacks Pride, western New York, is what do I do about some of my more conservative communities where we're seeing pride events being established for the first or second time? And many of them are saying, I'm going to businesses and asking them to, you know, whether it be give $250 or just to fly a pride flag. And so many of these organizers are saying to us, I'm getting a lot of pushback. Mm-hmm. Or they're doing it, but they're afraid they're going to get pushback. And it's become a point of contention. But I think within all of our communities, we have so much power just to show inclusion and acceptance and affirmation across the state.
We have just about a minute and a half before we have to go over to a break. But I do want to just include this and we can get back to it on the other side of the break. But you, Stephen, you, Big Gay Hudson Valley has been responsible for these queer travel maps. And what has the reaction been to those? I would think generally positive, especially within the community.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we've published maps for Dutchess County and Ulster County. We hope to have more counties next year. You know, as we've been working with the counties, they are underwriting them. They receive support from I Love New York. But then we have over 40 advertisers in every map. And if people want to advertise, they can. And if they don't want to, they don't have to. I don't put any pressure on anyone to advertise. Our advertisers seek us out. And so folks are coming forward and saying, I want my business on this map. I want people to know that I'm supportive. And it's $350 for the year. But that allows us to print, distribute, create tools that can help to bring more people into our counties to support tourism, economic development, and equality all across of our state.
We're going to pause there. We'll take a break and head over to Pledge Central and be right back.
1-800-323-9262. Thanks, Joe. That's our number. You're hearing a series of special roundtable panels, and we're bringing them to you in the hopes that you make a pledge now in the lockbox portion of our drive. Sarah LaDuc, the fun drive, wall to wall at Treetop Tall, begins Monday at 6 a.m.
1-800-323-9262. It does indeed. And ahead of the fun drive beginning on Monday, we're trying to raise as much money as we can surrounding these special roundtable panels so that the drive will be as short as possible.
Oh, it's my turn. Oh, there are people to thank. Okay. 800-323-9262. If you haven't made your pledge yet, please, let's make those phones ring. 800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. We're up to $407,081 in the lockbox.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so we have a long way to go, but things are moving swimmingly.
1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. Thanks to Susan in Ballston Lake, New York, who's his best radio station. Thank you for keeping us educated about all issues relevant to the day. Listen all the time. We heard from Mary in Tivoli, New York. Margaret in Reedsboro, Vermont, who is a sustaining member.
Oh, I'll be darned.
And says, for those on a limited income and watching their budget like me, the sustaining $10 a month auto donation is super easy, economical, and a big benefit to WAMC. And you get a shirt to boot to let your community know what your favorite radio station is. Thanks, Ray, for explaining the sustainer level. And that is from Margaret.
Margaret did it better than I did.
I wasn't going to say. We also heard from Lamont in Rotterdam, New York, Christine in Berrytown, New York, and Gene in Ackard, owner of the Blue Heron Bookstore in High Falls. Thank you, Gene.
Love. You know what? I'm so glad books still exist.
Me too.
I love books. I could never read an e-book. I couldn't.
Okay.
I know you do. Do you?
Confrontational. I do, yeah.
All right, it's fine. Let's agree to disagree. Thanks to Sheila in Hyde Park, New York.
I do both.
Paper is wonderful. I know. I'm whatever. I'm sure there's a reason we shouldn't have them, but I like them.
Okay.
Thanks to George in Lenox, Massachusetts. Thanks to Eileen in Mechanicville, who is a
sustaining member. 1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. 1-800-323-9262. There's one more segment of this morning's special panel coming up after Ray and I say adieu this time, and then we'll be back for a longer section to hopefully convince you to donate to WAMC and help us shorten next week's fund drive.
We really do need you. And again, if you have already made the pledge, we've heard from several people over the course of the last day, but many over the last couple of weeks who say, yeah, we're a sustainer. We pledge every month a little comes out of our checking account. It goes to WAMC, but here's a little more for the fund drive and the lockbox. And to those people, I say thank you. If you have not pledged yet, it all counts on day one. We really would love to whittle that fund drive down. It's election season, and there's a lot of news happening all the time. We need you now. If you're going to pledge, I encourage you to do it while operators are standing by. 800-323-9262.
1-800-323-9262. $407,081 raised so far in the lockbox, an incredible amount of money, such generous support from so many people out there. But we have a goal to reach. We can't continue to be the station that we are and work as hard as we do without funds to keep the lights on and the microphones also on and off when they should be. 800-323-9262. So please give us a call if you listen. Support the station. Tell us what you like about the station. Tell us what you don't like about the station. We're open to constructive criticism.
Mainly what you like.
800-323-9262 or WAMC.org.
Are we done?
We're very nearly done.
I can't tell. I don't know what the clock says over there.
9262 or WAMC.org. A final segment of the roundtable panel, and we will return in a bit. We'll go back to
them.
Keep
pledging.
Now, thank you.
Thank you very much, Sarah LaDuc and Ray Graff. And we have our last 15 minutes with this incredible panel. And we'll bring them. I think their microphone is still on in Pledge Central. There we go.
Still on?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, I was.
Let me put my headphones on. Did I swear at all?
No.
Oh, good. Oh, great.
No.
We were waiting.
Well,
let me take my Mets hat off here. Hang on. Sorry about that.
Let's go, Ray.
No, I wasn't purposely talking to you. I just noticed that the mic was on, so I just wanted to make sure the mic was off.
As you know,
I said anything.
I rarely swear in real life, so
I know.
It was probably no danger that anything
None.
Really bad happened.
Absolutely not.
We'll have fun with the show.
Thank you very much. Okay. I appreciate it. All right, let's go back to our terrific panel this morning in the special edition of the Roundtable. Let me remind you who is with us for this go-around. Kevin Bailey, founder of Come Out Central New York, as well as Stephen Hengst, co-founder and executive director of Big Gay Hudson Valley, and Libby Post, political consultant, lobbyist, and regular Roundtable panelists.
Yes, I'm a regular.
You're a regular.
It feels so good to say that.
I know. It's so good. And we thank all of you for being with us. And so in the time that we have some letters I want to get to, but also the idea of, for those of us not in the directly in the community, of how we become better allies. And I think we touched on this when we were talking about being business owners and communities. I think we touched on this when we were talking about the maps and businesses that may not be LGBTQIA run, however, are supportive of the community. So how, in your opinion, for all of you, how do you believe that we can become better allies and better citizens?
Ooh, that's a deep question, Joe. You know, allyship starts at a very early age. And I think for anyone who has children out there, allyship develops, kids learn hate.
Yes.
And I think if you've got kids in your home, bringing kids to Pride events, making sure that kids know about maybe your friends that are different, why they're different, helping them to understand relationships. You know, my husband and I have many, heterosexual friends who we've met their kids at very early ages. Once they start to understand the nature of relationships, they say, why are Stephen and Patrick married? Well, Stephen and Patrick are married, but they're not a boy and a girl. And, I've heard so many of my friends say, people love one another and they choose who they want to be in a relationship with. And the moment you say that to kids, they're like, great. I didn't know that. And so, I think it's answering questions honestly and being upfront with especially with young people and with ourselves and being open to new ideas. Kevin,
and
what do you think?
As adults, right? People learn, and often when confronted with truth, and especially truth about people they know and love, they tend to be open to change. And I think folks who are disturbed by the hate that is being directed at the LGBTQIA community can support us by showing up and showing up to our events, showing up, speaking up when they encounter the hate or the bias. Generally, some of our biggest supporters in Come Out Central New York are allies who their value is a value of inclusion, equity for all. And so when they see an opportunity to support the LGBTQ community, they're happy to step up.
Libby?
Don't vote for people who are going to hurt us.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's, for me, that's one of the biggest bottom line. Don't vote. If you are an ally, you cannot vote for Donald Trump. If
right.
you are an ally, you can't vote for a right-wing Republican who want to put us in jail, exile us to an island, which would probably be a very nice island after we were there for a while.
It'd be a fabulous
That's
island,
right.
Libby.
It would be very, very fine. So, but your vote speaks to your allyship
yes.
as well, and that's
yes.
really important. And, it's hard to do the speak-up part, but when you're, in that body shop, right, and people are making gay jokes, to find the strength within yourself to say, look, stop, my best friend or my son or my nephew or whatever is gay or lesbian or whatever part of the alphabet soup they are, right?
Yep.
So, people need to speak up. They need to vote. their conscience in terms of being recognizing who is and who isn't pro LGBT rights, and to show up. I mean, talking about being an ally, I mean, you know, in schools, you've got the classrooms with the rainbow flags, so the kids mm-hmm. know where to go. Mm-hmm. Businesses too, you know, you have that out there to show that you're LGBT friendly and welcoming. You know, it's one thing to be friendly; it's another thing to be welcoming, and it's the welcoming part that really needs to be worked on and make sure that everybody in your establishment understands what that means.
And that requires intentional work.
Right, yeah. Right. So
we got a letter from Cece who says, I hope that libraries are inserted into today's discussion because they're on the front lines. Libby, I know you do a lot of work with libraries, and this has become a huge issue for libraries, not just because of drag queen story hours, but because of the books that so many people are trying to pull out of public libraries and school libraries, both, and the just the fact that of a library having a book with a queer storyline is somehow that is going to damage their child. Right. And so, yes, the libraries and the librarians are on the front lines.
Yeah, they are on the front lines. And there are some states, Texas and a couple of other states, have told their libraries that they can no longer be members of the American Library Association because the American Library Association upholds the values and standards of what it means to be a public library, which is open access to all.
Can
right?
they do that legally?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, they can say they're going to withhold state funding if they join, but that somebody would have to take them to the court and all that sort of stuff. But the I used to say puppies, kittens, and libraries were the last bastion of nonpartisanship. Now it's just puppies and kittens.
Yeah.
You know, and
she said that and got into the New York Times.
Yes, I did say that. I was the quote of the day. I was floored.
Well, you know, it's interesting the question about libraries. Just the other day, my husband and I went to our library in Port U in New York in the municipality of Esopus in the Hudson Valley, and they had a big sign on the front in their upcoming events. National Coming Out Day event at the Esopus Public Library.
Right.
And they had a gender nonconforming band there tonight performing from 4:30 to 6:30. And, you know, this is, you know, I'm sure there's a librarian there or, you know, whoever's running that library who this is, you know, something that they want to see happen. And it's on the front lines of our movement because it's educating younger people. It's educating those in our communities. And it's having a presence in so many of our conservative communities.
It's, you know, it's the library, it's the librarian, it's the staff. Mm-hmm. It's the system. The Mid-Hudson Library System is run by Rebecca Smith Aldrich, and she's an ally of the community. I've known her for a very long time. NYLA, the New York Library Association, is very inclusive. They believe in the basic tenets of librarianship, which is open access to all, which means Republican, conservative, Democrat, liberal, gay, straight, nonconforming, whatever. Anybody can come in. Anybody can take out a book. What those books that they take out are the business of the people who took them out. It's that information is not made public anywhere. I don't care if a parent comes in, right? Somebody sat here once. We had a conversation with a panelist, and he was like, "Well, I don't know if I want my kid to read that book." I said, you can tell your kid what to read. You can't tell my kid what to read. And that is the crux of this. You don't want your kid to read Huck Finn or, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird or, you know, Heather Has Two Mommies or, you know, the Penguin book, which I happen to love. You know, whatever it is, you don't. That's your decision for your child, right? You can't make that decision for my child or anyone else's child. And that's what they're attempting to do. Now, I'm on a library board here, and we have a process. It's a little library, but we have a process where if somebody wants a book taken off of shelf, they have to come in, fill out a form, tell us why, blah, blah, blah. They usually stop at filling out the form because they have to put their name on it.
I remember when I was 12 years old, I would have my mom drop me off at the public library. Yeah. And I was just figuring out my sexuality. And I remember looking for every book that I could find about gay at my library.
Yeah.
And I felt, you know, looking back on it now, I was so fortunate to have resources before the internet, that were at my fingertips in my library. And while many people have access to internet resources now, not everybody does. And there's a lot of dark stuff on the web, too. So, you know, I felt so much more in a place of being supported as a child and saying, hey, you know what, Mom, can you bring me to the library? I was reading about science, I was reading about astronomy, and I was reading about everything queer that I could find. And it helped to build who I am today. But, you know, information and resources are critically important, and we get that through our libraries.
That's such a great point, because I was a library page. It was my first job, and I was 12 years old, and it was, I remember our library director being insistent that we, that the library had books on sexuality, that the books had books on being gay, and had books and because her point was just the point you made, and this was back in late 70s, early 80s, that there's nowhere else anyone, a young kid included, can get that information. We're not going to hide it.
Yep.
We're not going to put it behind the shelf. We're just going to put it out there, and people can have access to it.
I grew up in Kentucky. And
Dear God, tell us about that.
Well, I grew up in Kentucky, and public libraries saved my life.
Okay, good.
You know, having access to that information helped me understand that I am not alone. I didn't know a single person who was gay. I grew up in the 80s and early 90s when media portrayal of gay people was typically negative. Gay men got AIDS and died. And so having access to the information that I found in public libraries literally saved my life.
And there are so few resources like that. I mean, that they offer that kind of information.
And the rate, the suicide rate of LGBTQ youth is much higher than the national average for youth who are not LGBTQ.
Because people feel alone.
People feel alone.
Mm-hmm. Well, libraries can change and have helped shape people's lives. Mm-hmm. There's no two ways about it.
You know, I mean, that's why Kevin and I both produce the events that we do as Big Gay Hudson Valley and come out Central New York. I meet hundreds and thousands of people a year at the events that we convene. And from folks that are just coming out of the closet to folks that are maybe just starting a gender transition to parents that have a queer child and have had nowhere else that they know where to go. Last weekend, we hosted an event called Out on the Farm at a cidery in Highland, New York, and we had over 800 people show up.
That's great.
We had a drag story time. We had craft stations for kids. We had a DJ playing music for kids at the start of the night, and we had over 150 children show up. Many of them came with queer parents or just really cool allied parents who wanted their children to be around gay people to know that, hey, there's relationships come in a lot of different forms.
Right.
And but, you know, it's the reason why we produce the events that we do is not just to connect people, but also just to help people know that they are not alone. Mm-hmm. Like, we are all in this together, and we're all working to fight for the same rights.
Hate flourishes in ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Ignorance and isolation. And so, you know, the power of the events that Stephen and I put on is that they connect people. I launched a new event last month, a queer happy hour. And, you know, folks came out and a couple of people said, well, this is the first gay event I've gone to in Syracuse. I had no idea there were so many queer people in Syracuse. And you know, people drive from an hour from Watertown, from Binghamton, from Cortland to come to our events. They don't want to be alone. And so driving or producing those opportunities for connection in person is so powerful.
And we also look at so we were talking about a time before the internet and where libraries and other, there were places with allies where you could get information. But now with social media, I mean, that's a whole other, that's a whole other game. I mean, I'm bringing this up with a minute to go on the show, so it's not even fair. We'll just do another show on that.
Uh-huh.
But dear God, you know, and that's another way that you can feel alone really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That's a way you can be targeted.
Feel the hate.
You can be
right.
targeted
feel
so
the
quickly.
Hate. Yeah. And that's very, very scary. We just have about a minute and a half. I'd like each of you just to talk about closing thought of what you would like people to take away from our conversation this morning.
You know, I think the idea of allyship is very strong. And if you're a queer person in the community, coming out and building your community and being involved is really important. If you check out BigGayHudsonValley.com or give us a follow at Big Gay Hudson Valley on Instagram, you'll see everything that's happening. We have events. We have conferences. We're bringing a show featuring John Waters to Kingston, New York. We give people an opportunity to convene in a number of different situations and settings. And it's incredibly important right now that we all share information, we stay connected, and that we vote this mm-hmm. election year. Everybody must vote. Grab a friend. Bring them to vote with you. Vote, 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 like all of our rights depend on it.
Absolutely. And just similarly in Central New York, comeoutcny.com has all of our events. But more importantly, again, vote. Please vote.
And I'm going to do something that I always do because it's in our contract. I'm going to let Libby have the last word.
And you're going to like this last word?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay, everybody knows I'm a lesbian and everybody knows that I'm on this show. I'm on the round table, and I'm on the round table because WRMC values diversity, values our voices. And so my parting thought would be give to the lockbox. They're going to come back mm-hmm. on. Give to the lockbox. There need to be queer dollars in the lockbox, just like there's a lot of straight dollars in that lockbox. But if people want this kind of programming to continue, this is the station where it's going to happen. It's not going to happen anyplace else.
You're the best. Thank you all very much. Go ahead.
I was going to say, let's see that lockbox full of pink dollars.
Yeah. Mm.
Absolutely. My thanks to Kevin Bailey, Stephen Hanks, and, of course, Libby Post. Thanks to all of you. So let's show those queer dollars. Let's go over to Pledge Central.